I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. One of the more moving documentaries that you'll see has its broadcast premiere Tuesday, the 6th of March on the Knowledge Network. It's a Knowledge Network original. The title is For Dear Life, and the filmmaker Carmen Pollard joins me now. She films the final years and days of James Pollard, her cousin, as he's diagnosed with cancer, how he chooses to live to the end of his life and how he prepares for the future ahead. The film premiered last year at the Doxa Documentary Film Festival and had 3 sold-out screenings. It's gone on to other festivals to great acclaim. James Pollard was a theater producer, and he orchestrated his death the way he lived. It's moving. You meet James's family, his kids, Emma and Desmond, his partner, Dr. Haley Broker, his dad, John, and Dr. Paul Sugar, who runs a palliative care practice. He's a remarkable figure. Carmen Pollard is a writer, director, an editor, and visual effects artist. For Dear Life is her feature-length directorial debut. She has been nominated for an Emmy, Gemini, and several Leos, including an award for editing, for best editing on Dirt. She was an editor on Ninth Floor. The film will be available on Knowledge's website, knowledge.ca, for streaming after its television debut, the 6th of March. The website for more is at fordearlife.ca. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Carmen Pollard. Ms. Pollard, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
The one thing I noticed in the film is that that we have in common is that we're both queasy at needles.
Yes. It's interesting because I have family. You know, my grandmother was a nurse, and I certainly don't have the same aptitude as she and other family members have for the medical stuff.
Yeah, my mom's a nurse, and I'm surprised as well. I mean, and then I wonder because of the needles that are used, I guess, in chemotherapy, they're huge.
Mm-hmm.
Why you were in the room, and why you put that in the film?
Yeah. Well, I mean, part of what motivated me to make the film was the fact that I was so afraid of death, but also just anything to do with medical events of any kind. And I think somehow subconsciously I sort of had reached a point in my life where I realized that I needed to either face this head on or, that it wasn't going to get any easier, let's put it that way, as we all are aging and we're all dying, actually.
Yeah.
It just becomes more and more common that we're surrounded by people who are in various stages of the dying process, so to speak. And so it was, I think it was just all about facing my fears.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a wonderful thing that this film does. It gives us sort of a language to talk about death because we are so reticent, whether we're fearful of it or we just want to put it off because we would want to put death off, itself.
Yeah.
Let's talk about James because he's at the center. He's the heart of the film. He was your cousin. What was he like growing up?
Well, James was a very gregarious, performative person. I mean, he actually started working in the theater before finishing high school.
Mm.
And, everything, he saw the world from a theatrical lens and every sort of event in his life became not only a production but also a story around that. So, as a kid, I looked up to him. He was close to 10 years older than me.
Mm.
And so when you're young, that's a significant amount of time. And, I didn't see him all the time as a child. It was when he was a cousin, so I saw him at special occasions. And he was the one cousin that I really admired and looked up to. And I think because he was so such an extrovert and I was such an introvert.
I guess it was inevitable that his death would be a sort of theatrical production, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't actually occur to me when I approached him for the film. I was really interested in how he so needed to speak openly and frankly about his terminal prognosis, and that it was making those around him, including myself, really uncomfortable. And that was what I initially honed in on. And it wasn't until I had sort of turned my camera on that I realized that he was creating all of these other, that he was turning his dying process into a production, essentially. And then that's when I got really interested. Mm.
How old was he when he was diagnosed with cancer?
46.
46. And so it was about six and a half years, was it? When was it that it was actually terminal, when the cancer metastasized? Because when he was diagnosed, was he given, say, a timeline as to how long he'd live?
Yeah, I mean, it all happened pretty quickly. So I think by the time he was actually diagnosed, he was already terminal, but they didn't know that immediately. But it was within a few months of his initial cancer diagnosis that it was determined that it had spread into his bones. Mm. And so what started out as prostate cancer was already, had already metastasized by the time he was diagnosed. He had no symptoms. I think it was just a routine check where they found it.
And had he met Haley at that point?
He met Haley right after he had received his diagnosis. His cancer diagnosis, yeah. And so she was already in his life when he discovered he was terminal. But as I said, I don't have the exact time frame, but I know it was within a few months.
And it's a very close relationship between James and Haley. Haley's a doctor, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And it's a remarkable relationship, really, when you think about it. That here's a guy who. Who's got the clock ticking, if you will. I mean, we all have the clock ticking, but this guy has it's a lot more urgent in his case. And she's a doctor, and they meet and they fall in love, right?
I thought that was remarkable as well. It was another part of the story that really interested me was, I mean, she's a doctor who deals with the beginning of life. She delivers babies, but of course she understands what she understood. I mean, she went into it eyes wide open, whereas the rest of us were so sheltered from death and these medical events in this part of the world that, within our culture, that we were really naive, whereas Haley really knew what she was facing. And she chose to go on that journey with him, which I think is a really brave and remarkable choice.
What's also fascinating about this journey is, and this happens at the beginning of the film, where people are talking to you, people within the family, about, say, James and the nature of their relationships, and yeah. how his illness and his terminal illness hastens different aspects the relationship has changed, without spoiling anything or getting too personal, say, the nature of his relationship with certain family members, his ex-wife, his kids, his dad, his stepmom, where are they at the beginning, when he's diagnosed, and what happens in the film in terms of how they, well, I mean, it seems from my view of it that they end up getting closer. And I guess, well, was that something important to James to want to say bridge the whatever gaps there were in these relationships?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I would say his relationships were close to begin with, but you know, like the thing about James, which was so remarkable, is his willingness to be really honest through the process of dying. And so not only share, you know, the physical transformation he went through, but also the emotional transformation. And I think that that's rare for any of us to sort of be willing to be that pure in terms of telling our story. So, I mean, I think that when given a terminal diagnosis and knowing that the end is, you know, at first he was told it could be 6 months, right? So your instinct is to wrap things up, is to really make sure that you tie up all the loose ends, which includes any sort of parts of relationships that are needing, mm-hmm. you know, attention, I guess. So, yeah, that's definitely a theme within the film. I don't want to give away too much of that. But I do think that, I mean, the one thing that I've learned from making the film and really looking at death head on is just how important it is to our living experience. Like death isn't, I mean, we sort of separate life and death, but death is actually, you know, one of the most important life events. And so I think that by addressing our disconnect, we actually can learn to live better. And and I think that was really the point and the message that James was trying to get across, is without sounding cliche, it's like, you know, you really, when you're faced with a terminal diagnosis, you really reframe what's important, you know. And so in some ways it's a gift, especially if you get to, you know, if you get to have a long dying process, you have all this opportunity to kind of reframe life to its, you know, to the essentials, to what's really, to what really matters.
Yeah, I'm sure James, you know, near the end would have wanted to get better and live, you know, live a longer life. But the sense is that there's a sense of satisfaction. I mean, am I drawing too much or drawing into say what he might have been feeling near the end?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Like, do you think that, because you did mention that if we are conscious of death as a reality, or we talk about it more, one lives a much more fuller life.
Yeah.
Did James think that at the end, do you think? That it was a full life for him?
Well,
as short as it was?
Again, I think that that's revealed in the film, and I kind of feel like that we want to say that. We want people to, the purpose of our conversation is we really want people to watch the film.
Yeah.
But I will say that nothing in life can be really wrapped up in a perfect bow, and I think that the film really illustrates that. And I think that's something that, you know, the more we can accept kind of life in all of its imperfections, the richer our experience can be.
My eagerness, if people will pardon, is because I enjoyed the film a great deal and learned a lot from it, and just felt uplifted by it. So you'll pardon my trying to spoil it.
Oh no! That's great. I think that, I mean, We come from a culture that is so obsessed with youth and perfection and control.
Right.
And I think that's a big theme in the film. And what's interesting is, as much as James tried to control and orchestrate and essentially produce his death, there was so much that was outside of his control. And I think that that comes across in the story. And I think that, you know, there's something to take away from that, and I think there's different ways to look at it. There's your experience it sounds like you felt quite uplifted and inspired by it, and some people really question whether he was able to achieve exactly what he had set out to achieve, and I think that question will always remain, because James isn't here to answer it.
Right.
And I know for me, at the end, my big question was ultimately, was he afraid of that final moment?
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, that truly was his biggest fear. And that's a lot of us are afraid of the pain leading up to death. And what was unique about James was he was willing to withstand a tremendous amount of pain for the opportunity to have another day with people and with his life, and yet the idea of no longer existing was terrifying. So I think it's different for everyone, right?
Yeah, and he's willing to show what that pain looks like, which we see in the course of the film. I mean, The pain is written all over his body that he's going through. We also see James's thinking sort of evolve. There's a moment in the film where he, I mean, how long was it when he decided that he wanted to build his own coffin?
It was about a year and a half before he died that the process began. One of the things I think that's really important to note is that the film is not a big downer. It's actually quite funny, and that was really important to James. It was really important to myself and my producers that the humor that James sort of lived his, you know, he sort of lived his, well, he approached his death with this gallows humor, and we really wanted that to get a, come across in the film because, I mean, a terminal diagnosis is not the end of somebody's life. He lived for close to 7 years with it. So, you know, there was a lot of living left for a lot of people after receiving it. And so I think it's really important to show that there's still so much joy and beauty in the dying process. And people who, I mean, when we screen the film with audiences, festival audiences, the theaters, you know, full of laughter all the way up to the very end. So although we see the pain and we see the transformation in his body, we also, you know, it's not all difficult. And so I think,
So the one moment that I chuckled at was when, in the planning of building this coffin, he thinks that it'll be interesting or important to have his father and his son participate in building the coffin, and he's quickly, talked out of that.
Yeah, well, not talked. You know, it was questioned, but he, as you see in the film, he went through with his. Well, I guess to a certain degree, I think that his friend Bruce chose to work on it with him, and perhaps that wasn't something that his father and son wanted to participate in. But he certainly thought it was a great idea. And that's something that because of our disconnect and with death, a lot of people have questioned whether that was a good idea for him to invite his close family and friends to experience his death with him through this process. And a lot of people are uncomfortable with that. And you know, from the inside, I would say it actually was, at least for me, and I know for many of us, it made the experience a lot easier. I mean, my grieving process with James was completely different from any other death I've experienced. And unfortunately, I've experienced a few people who I was very close with died very young and really couldn't deal with the grief. Mm-hmm. And in this case, the grief has been completely manageable. So, and I really, I'm certain that it's because of the process we went through of making the film and experiencing and really being invited to literally, you know, touch death with James and his burial. And I think that if more of us choose to do, you know, choose to create our own dying experience and look at it and experience it as within our families and communities in ways we haven't in over 100 years, that we can really transform the dying and grieving experience.
Yeah. I mean, I was selfishly just thinking of the shots that would have come out if the father and the son had helped make the coffin, what that would have looked like on film. And I guess this speaks to James's theatricality, his sense of theater. Wanting that to play out in your film, had that happened.
Yeah, I don't know if he was doing it for the film, though. People often question that, you know, especially people who don't know James. And James was actually just living his life, and we were, you know, documenting it from as close to an observational perspective as possible. I mean, that is always the goal and the intent. And obviously, I can't help but bring my own perspective on it. So, but it truly was happening, and we were documenting it. It wasn't something that was orchestrated for the film. Mm-hmm. So I don't even think it occurred to James what it would look like in the film. It just was the way he lived his life and saw the world.
Yeah, yeah. Someone else that's in the film that comes across is just remarkable. I've got a friend who knows him quite well, and so I've known him for I haven't met him, but I've known of him for a bit. Is Dr. Paul Sugar? His practice, I guess, is palliative care. Is that right?
It is, yeah. And he really is a legend in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. As somebody, if you're, if a loved one's dying, you want him to be their doctor,
And I guess this is one of the first times that we've seen him work and feel like seen him on camera, say?
Yeah, I think he was right around the time when we were filming, actually. I think that one of the local television series did a short story with him.
I see.
But other than that, I don't think he has appeared on film, and certainly not in a documentary. And he was very, very supportive of our project, very supportive of James, obviously. And there was a whole other area of work that they were sort of embarking on together that isn't in the film. But James really was a supporter of the work that Paul and is doing around creating this center for palliative care outside of the medical system. And James was trying to help brainstorm ways of funding that, a self-sustaining funding strategy for that. So they had a really good relationship, and but Paul certainly was supportive of the filmmaking process, and taught me a lot about how to live with death, basically.
Yeah. So for people, this is another great reason why to see this film. On Knowledge Network on March 6th is you get to see Dr. Paul Sugar and what he does and just how important the work he does is, not just for James, but I mean for all of his patients. I think the experience is there in your film, right?
Yeah.
I want to ask about John, James's father.
Yeah.
Because John's wife, for people who may or may not know, is a former MLA, and she resigned. She decided not to seek re-election because of John's health. How is John today?
John is fine. John's doing well. He had decline in health shortly after the film. After we finished filming,
So people get to see John, and it's remarkable to watch him in the film too, because it's not natural for parents to see their kids die, and to see how he experiences that, I think is extremely valuable too, and this is something in your film that you bring us that just enriches our experience. What's next for you, Carmen?
Well, I'm working on a few projects right now, two in very early stages of development, and then a couple other projects where I'm working on in a more supportive capacity.
Mm-hmm.
The projects that I'm developing are so early that I'm not at a stage where I'm really wanting to share.
Sure.
But I've got some good stuff brewing. Let's put it that way.
So this was your first full-length feature, is that right?
That's right. As a director,
yeah.
I've been an editor. I've cut several feature documentaries as a picture and story editor, but this is the first as a director.
And so this is something that you want to continue doing and making your own films, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, it's a hell of a debut. And it's a marvelous film, and congratulations on it. And I again urge people listening to us to watch it on Knowledge Network on March 6th. I so appreciate your time today. Thanks for this.
Thank you so much.
For Dear Life is on the Knowledge Network Tuesday, the 6th of March at 9 p.m. Visit fordearlife.ca for more information. Carmen Pollard joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.